I stepped out of the saloon onto the porch, and as I did, a buggy rolled past in the street. Something about it was familiar. It was that traveling preacher at the reins, I realized, the one who had stopped by the fish hook several weeks earlier. I recognized his sober black suit and his dour expression. This time, he wasn't alone, though. Sitting beside him was a young woman with flaming red hair, and she was so pretty she damn near took my breath away. She had looked back at me as the buggy went by, and I would have sworn she started to smile. A couple of the men who had dragged the cowboys out of the saloon still lingered on the porch. Who was that?
You mean Reverend Hatfield? He's fixing to build a church here. It'll be Largo's first one. If we could get a school too, this place would be well on its way to being a real town.
What about the girl with him?
Her? She's his daughter, I've heard.
If she is, she must take after her ma. You wouldn't think a peach that ripe could come from such a dried-up little prune as the preacher, would you?
You know her name?
Daisy, I think. Yeah, that's it. Daisy Hatfield.
It suited her. I started toward Tom Mulrooney's blacksmith shop to claim my buckboard team and settle up with Tom for keeping them in his stable for a few days. We made quite a procession as we headed back out to the ranch, me driving the buckboard with my saddle horse tied on behind, with the two young men and the two old men following on horseback. I wasn't sure the bunkhouse was big enough for all of them. Randy would have to move out there too. He'd been staying in the house while he recuperated, but if he was going to be one of the crew, I couldn't show him any favoritism. I was the boss, so I'd have the house to myself. Well, except maybe for Scar. The trail from town to the ranch was pretty easy to follow, but I pointed out various landmarks along the way to be sure the fellas wouldn't get lost the next time they had to make the trip. I showed them the two little hills that looked like a camel's hump.
Looks more like a lady's bosoms to me.
You wish.
As a matter of fact.
And over yonder on the other side of the trail, there's a tree that was struck by lightning sometime in the past. Now you can see the scar down its side where the fire went.
Let's see you compare that to some part of a lady's anatomy.
Well, now that you mention it.
Then there's that rock spire with the two boulders at the base. And before you go telling us what that looks like, I reckon we can all guess, Enoch.
I find that I can recall things better if I relate them to things I'm familiar with.
The whole conversation made the two youngsters turn pink. Or maybe it was just the sun. Anyway, we pushed on. By late afternoon, we reached the fish hook. Scar came out to greet us.
Lord, if that ain't the ugliest dog I ever seen.
He was here before you were.
But an ugly dog's got character, I always say. There's a fella at the door with a rifle.
Oh, that's Randy. Randy McClellan. He's been laid up with a bullet crease he got helping me fight some outlaws. He's part of the crew, too. A foreman's a vaquero by the name of Santiago Marquez. He and his two cousins, Javier and Fernando, ride with us, too. They have their own little rancho, though, so you won't have to share the bunkhouse with them.
Good. It don't look big enough for the rest of us as it is.
You might be a little crowded, but I figure you'll work it out, though. I waved Randy out of the house and introduced him to the rest of the bunch.
I reckon the cook shack is out back?
Yep. The supplies are in the house because I've been doing all the cooking in there, but you can move anything out there you want to.
Might as well get started rustling some supper now, I suppose. You boys are going to have to get used to my cooking sooner or later.
Gabe went off to have a look at the cook shack. Well, you did tell me he's a good cook, didn't you? What he said there at the end didn't sound too encouraging.
Don't worry, you won't be disappointed.
Could have had ham for supper, but that wild beast got it.
Randy and Scar don't get along too well. That wasn't the case with Bert and Scar. The youngster's face lit up when he saw the dog, and I was about to warn him to be careful when I saw him approaching Scar. Then I realized that Scar wasn't growling and snarling like he usually did whenever anybody got too close to him. I held my breath a little as Bert reached out to scratch those ragged ears. But Scar not only tolerated it, he looked like he enjoyed it. Well, I'll swan. I thought old Bert might get his hand bit off.
He's got a way with animals. They all seem to like him, even when they don't like anybody else.
Good boy.
Bert got down on one knee and loved all over Scar. I just shook my head in amazement and went on into the house. Enoch turned out to be right about Gabe's skills in the cook shack. My biscuits weren't exactly hard as rocks, but Gabe's were a lot better. The stew he whipped up out of not much was pretty good, too. After we'd eaten that evening, Gabe spoke up.
I'm taking the buckboard back down to town tomorrow, so I can stock up on some real food instead of the scraps you got around here. It takes plenty of provisions to feed a handful of hungry cowboys. Might need to slaughter a steer for beef, too.
I reckon I can spare it. Do what you need to do. Gabe nodded, and I knew that at least part of the operation was in good hands. I hoped the rest of it would turn out to be, too. For the next 2 weeks, I worked as hard, maybe harder, than I ever had in my life. And the long days in the saddle were constant reminders that I wasn't as young as I used to be. Even though I was the boss, Santiago pushed me as much as he did the rest of the crew. I didn't mind, but sometimes my sore muscles did. Since Santiago and the Gallardos had been working for Abner Tillotson for several years, I knew they had to be good hands. Enoch proved to be one too, and even though he was considerably older than me, the work didn't seem to bother him. He went from dawn to dusk and seemed as fresh when he stopped as when he started. Randy, Bert, and Vince were the ones who really suffered starting out.
Do me a favor, Santiago. Please take it easy on Randy as much as you can because of that wound.
He'll finish healing better if he gets out and moves around. The sun and the air will be good for him.
I figured Santiago knew what he was talking about. And sure enough, Randy's pallor started to go away and he seemed stronger. It helped, too, that he was eating better once Gabe took over the cooking. I heard Santiago muttering to himself in Spanish a few times when he tried to work with Bert and Vince. They didn't know what they were doing, but like I had told them, they kept their eyes open and gave every job an honest effort. Sure, they let some cows get away from them now and then. They couldn't handle the branding iron very well, and their throws with the lasso usually fell short or went way wide of the mark. But gradually, they began to get better at those chores and the other things Santiago told them to do. We hazed in the cattle from the east and west pastures first, since that was the easiest job. Then Santiago turned our attention to the rugged hills to the south, and we spent long days rounding up the stock that had strayed into the canyons and valleys and brush-choked draws. It was high, difficult work chousing those critters out of their hidey holes and driving them down to the bed ground we'd established along the creek. Even before we finished doing that, Santiago split the crew in half. 4 men working on the roundup, while the other 4 got started branding all the new calves.
Yeah, yeah. Come on! Let's go!
Once, near the end of the 2 weeks, Santiago and I paused and sat our saddles while we watched Randy, Vince, and Bert struggling to herd a jag of bulky cattle.
A crew of experienced men would have done this job in half the time, Senor Strickland.
Next time, those boys will be experienced men. Well, less inexperienced, anyway.
That is one way to look at it, I suppose.
Might as well. What matters to me is that we're getting it done.
Do you wish me to cut out a trail herd?
Yeah, I guess we better drive some of them down to the county seat and sell them. You'll pick out the best ones for that.
Si, senor. We can have the herd ready in another 3 or 4 days.
All right, then. Have at it, amigo. Gabe came to me that night.
If you're going to have a cattle drive, you got to have a chuck wagon, too.
We're just driving to the railroad at the county seat. That'll take, what, 3 days?
If you want to go without eating for 3 days, that's up to you. But I ain't sure the rest of the bunch will go along with that idea.
We can use the mules as pack animals and just carry our supplies with us that way.
That ain't the way it's done.
Well, what about the buckboard? Can you turn the buckboard into a chuck wagon?
Not a proper one. Oh, but I suppose it'd be better than nothing.
Look, I ain't trying to make things harder on you, Gabe. But the truth of the matter is, I'm not all that flush right now. I can't afford to buy a chuck wagon. Maybe next time.
All right. Just nobody better complain about what I'm feeding them. That's all I got to say.
By the time Santiago and the rest of the boys got the trail herd ready to go, Gabe had hammered together some cabinets and attached them to the back of the buckboard. The provisions and all the pots and pans would go in them. He had found a Dutch oven stored in the house as well and loaded it up. Santiago, how come Senor Tillotson didn't have his own chuck wagon? He must have driven hers to market before.
See, but the cook he always hired had his own wagon.
Well, why didn't you tell me that before? I could have hired that fella.
No, you could not, senor. He passed away last fall.
Oh, yeah, well, that would have made it kind of hard to hire him, wouldn't it?
Senor Wolverton will do all right. He plans to take along tortillas and beans and cabrito, so my cousins and I will eat well.
Where's he getting the goat meat?
From my madre and papa. They raise the goats.
Nobody said anything to me about this. I'm not sure I can afford it.
Not to worry. They will extend credit.
So I was gonna be in the hole before we even started on the drive. I wasn't sure I liked that, but there didn't seem to be anything I could do about it. The day came when we were ready to start the drive. We had 200 head in the herd. I'd been under the impression that was how many cattle were on the ranch, period. But when we did the final tally, the number was closer to 400. Now, I was far from rich, and once I covered expenses, the money I made from this drive wouldn't amount to all that much. But it was a start, I told myself. The drive went well. It was 3 days of hard work and eating dust, but I expected that. And when we reached the county seat and drove the cows into the stock pens along the railroad tracks, I felt a real sense of accomplishment. I also got my first look at the county seat. Largo could almost pass for the sort of cow town I'd known in the old days, except for the presence of a few automobiles and the telephone wires coming into town. The county seat was different, though. It was a real city, with paved streets, cars and trucks everywhere, and electric lights. I'd seen such places before, of course. I'd been to Europe, as well as New York, not to mention Denver, San Francisco, Dallas, San Antonio, places like that. So I wasn't some yokel who'd never been to the big city. The offices of the cattle company were in a 4-story brick building. I took Santiago with me and left the rest of the crew at a cafe near the stock pens. Santiago introduced me to the buyer Abner had always dealt with, and I explained that I was the new owner of the fish hook. We struck a deal pretty quickly, with me glancing at Santiago every now and then and getting tiny nods that let me know the terms were all right. And then the fella had a clerk draw up the paperwork and write me a check. When we came out of the building, I looked at the piece of paper in my hand.
I will show you the bank where Senor Tillotson had his account.
It occurred to me that Abner's account would still be there. Dying like he had, he'd never had a chance to close it out. If Santiago found out about that, he was bound to wonder why Abner hadn't taken his money with him when he left.
Well, that's all right. I can take care of this part. You go on back to the cafe, let the others know about the sale.
You would not cash the check and then, how would you say it, take off for the tall and uncut, would you, Senor Strickland?
Santiago, you think I'd run out on you boys while I still owe you wages?
If a man is going to run away, that would be the time to do it.
I thought you knew me better than that. I owe you fellas more than wages. You're all my friends. I couldn't hope to make a go of the fish hook without your help. I'd never run out on you.
My apologies, Senor Strickland.
Now, just to prove you don't have anything to worry about, you come along with me to the bank after all.
It will not be necessary. If we are going to work together, we should trust each other, no?
Well, you got a point there. Just tell me where the bank is and I'll take care of the rest.
The First National. 3 blocks down this street on the left.
All right. I'll see you back at the cafe in just a little while. With the money I owe you.
See.
I didn't figure shaming Santiago like that would work. And sure enough, it didn't. He trailed me to the bank, thinking that I didn't see him. But when it comes to skulking around, I had a lot more experience than he did and knew what to look for. At least he didn't come inside with me, though, and that was really all I was after. I was able to open a new account, deposit some of the money, and get what I needed in cash, and never once mentioned Abner Tillotson's name. When I got to the cafe, I found all 8 members of the crew sitting in a round booth at the back of the room. They made space for me. I took the envelope of cash out of my pocket and handed out the wages.
Gracias, señor.
Well, the roundup's done, boys. What you plan on doing now?
We sort of thought we'd keep on working for you, Mr. Strickland.
All of you?
No, my cousins and I. We have our own rancho to look after. But anytime you need extra hands, we will be glad to pitch in and help.
The rest of us thought we might stick around, though. That's all right with you, Jim.
I hired you fellas to work the roundup. I might be able to keep a couple of you on to help out around the ranch. It's a little big for one man to keep up with. Randy was hired first, so I reckon he's got first claim on one of the jobs.
I'll take it.
Gabe and me will work cheap. Hell, at our age, a place to sleep and some grub's almost enough. Don't need much else. Ain't that right, Gabe?
I'm a little tired of drifting. Besides, if you have to go back to eating your own cooking, you're liable to starve to death.
We really don't want to go back to pushing brooms at the depot, Mr. Strickland.
Maybe you could find something better. You said Vince's pa works for the railroad.
Yeah, but he's just a brakeman. He called in the only favor he had to get us those jobs the first time. He wouldn't be able to help us again.
Well, dadgummit. All right. The five of you can all come back to the ranch with me. I warn you, though, there may be some lean times ahead of us.
Oh, that's all right, Mr. Strickland. We'll all work together to make the fish hook the best spread west of San Antonio.
Damn right we will, Bert.
You know, I heard there's going to be a dance in Largo tomorrow night. We all ought to go to celebrate a successful roundup and cattle drive.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. What do you think, Mr. Strickland?
Sure. We'll go to the dance. The three youngsters talked about the dance all the way back to the ranch. We didn't get there until well after dark. Enoch and Gabe and I weren't quite so enthusiastic about it. Dances are for young men. But I planned to go anyway because I knew I'd enjoy the music and the good fellowship. About three-fourths of the way back to the fishhook, Santiago and his cousins bid the rest of us farewell when we reached a trail that angled off to the west. When we reached the ranch, Scar came out of the barn to meet us. I had worried about leaving him there at the ranch alone, but there was water in the creek and he could find plenty of jackrabbits around there as well. He barked, but he didn't growl this time. He even wagged his tail a time or two like he was glad to see us. The next day, the fellas were almost too excited about the dance to tend to their chores. But with Santiago gone, Enoch sort of took over the role of foreman and made sure that all the essential jobs got done. Around mid-afternoon, though, he told them that they ought to start getting ready for the dance. Randy, Bert, and Vince didn't waste any time. As they headed for the creek to wash off all the trail dust from the past week, I cleaned up as well. I washed, shaved, slicked down my hair, and splashed some bay rum on my face. I put on my best jeans and a clean white shirt with pearl snaps instead of buttons. I brushed my hat to get all the dust off of it and polished up my boots. When it came time to leave, I was a little surprised to see that Enoch and Gabe had cleaned up too. I thought you fellas weren't going.
We never said that. Just that dances are more for the young folks and for the old pelicans like us. We like listening to the music, though.
Speak for yourself. If there are any comely widow women there, I intend to dance with them.
The sun was still well up in the sky when we mounted up for the ride. We would get to Largo about dusk, I thought, and that was when the dance was supposed to get underway. As we got closer to town, I saw columns of dust rising here and there, all of them converging on Largo. I knew they came from wagons and groups of riders, all of them bound for town. A dance like this would draw nearly every able-bodied person for miles around. The population of Largo tonight would be four or five times what it usually was, maybe even more. I even spotted a couple of Model A and Model T automobiles bouncing and jouncing over the rough ground when we were nearly to town. The dance was being held in the schoolhouse. When we arrived, the open area around the big whitewashed building was already full of parked wagons and automobiles. Dozens of saddle horses were tied to anything sturdy enough to hold them. Kids ran here and there among the wagons, while men shook hands and women hugged each other. Ranch families might see their friends only a few times each year, so they took advantage of those opportunities to visit.
Big crowd.
Nothing wrong with big crowds. They're easier to blend into.
Sound like you're speaking from experience, Mr. Strickland.
Just common sense. Now, you don't have anything to worry about, son. Except maybe finding some pretty gals to dance with you. We joined the people who were streaming inside. The school's benches, chairs, and desks had all been shoved over to the wall or carried outside to make room for folks to move around. Streamers and paper lanterns were hung here and there for decoration. Crates had been brought in and placed at the front of the room so the musicians could stand on them. A table with a punch bowl and cups on it sat to one side. On the other side of the room was another table. This one loaded down with pies and cakes that would be raffled off later.
I think I'll go have a look at them pies. I might buy a chance on one of them. I got a hankering for a good apple pie.
Nothing wrong with the pies I make.
No man can bake a pie as good as a woman.
Oh, that's just plumb loco. I'll stack my pies up against any you'll find here.
Why didn't you bake one and bring it with you then?
Because I didn't think of it, that's why. Anyway, there wouldn't have been time.
Yeah, sure.
The musicians carried their instruments to the front of the room near the crates and started tuning up. That wasn't enough to make all the folks in the room hush, but they would once the men actually began to play. I looked around the room and saw a number of girls and young women congregating along the wall where the table with the punch bowl sat. They cast sly looks at every man who came through the door.
Looks like there's the bunch of fillies you'll have to choose from tonight.
Oh, not me. I don't actually dance.
He's got two left feet, and that's being generous. They're more like two leftover feet, but I don't know what they were left over from.
Nah, don't be like that. I'm sure Bert can dance just fine.
Nah, Vince is right, Mr. Strickland. I don't dare try to dance. If I did, it might cause a real calamity.
Oh, I doubt that. You just need to seize your chances, Bert, and devil take the hindmost. Besides, life would be mighty boring without a few calamities now and then.
Hey, Jim! Jim! Over here!
I looked around to see Clyde Farnham waving to me, and I went over to him.
I thought maybe you and your hands would come in for the dance, Jim.
You still getting that gasoline pump for the store, Clyde?
The Continental Oil Company is gonna put it in next week. It'll be the only one in the northern half of the county.
Well, I wish you luck with it. Even though I don't think I'll be driving an automobile and needing to buy gasoline anytime soon.
You never know. You might decide to up and join the 20th century one of these days.
Yeah, only when they make me. Not long after that, one of the guitar players got up on a crate.
Can I have everybody's attention? Attention, please! Welcome to the dance, folks. We hope all of you enjoy yourselves. And just as a reminder, there's a hat on the floor up here. So if any of you want to throw a nickel or a dime in, me and my boys will appreciate it. Now, everybody, on your best behavior. That means no fighting, no spitting, and no drinking in the schoolhouse. And here we go.
The other musicians had climbed up on their crates while he was talking. And when he finished, they broke into a lively tune. Men and women paired off and started whirling around the floor. And those who weren't dancing drew off to the sides to give them room and clapped along with the music. I had enjoyed my trips to Largo in the past, I suppose. But now, for the first time, I really felt like part of the community as I stood there enjoying the sight of all those people dancing. Randy and Vince had found partners, but Bert stood alone near the punch bowl watching. I figured he'd come around later. Sometimes it just takes a while for a fella to work up his courage, especially when he's doing something as scary as asking a girl to dance. I really wasn't paying attention to anything except what was going on out on the dance floor. So I didn't notice right away when someone came up beside me. Someone red-headed, green-eyed, and milky-skinned. Daisy Hatfield stood beside me, her lips curved in a smile as she watched the dancer. She wasn't looking at me, but I felt the unexpected power of her presence anyway.
It looks like they're having a lot of fun, doesn't it?
Yeah, I reckon.
Why aren't you dancing, Mr. Strickland?
I'll get around to it before the night's over, I expect. For now, I'm just enjoying watching these other folks have fun.
It's more fun if you get right in there and do it yourself.
I'm surprised to see you here, Miss Hatfield. I figured your father didn't hold with dancing. Most preachers don't.
Most Baptist preachers don't. My father is a Methodist.
Ah, a sprinkler, not a dunker.
That's right. But, well, to tell the truth, he doesn't know I'm here. He probably wouldn't approve. But if he devotes any thought to the matter at all, he probably thinks I'm in my room at the boarding house studying the Bible.
Yeah, that sounds like fun too, I suppose.
Not nearly as much fun as dancing. Would you think I was being terribly forward if I asked you to dance, Mr. Strickland?
Not at all. But wouldn't you rather dance with somebody closer to your own age?
You don't look all that much older than me.
Darling, you just don't know.
If you're not too old to get around the floor, that's all I care about. Come on.
Daisy took my arm. We walked out on the dance floor. I put my arm around her waist and took hold of her other hand. And off we went. We kept a respectable distance between us at all times, but I was touching her enough to feel the supple warmth of her body. And as we looked in each other's eyes, I sensed the current flowing between us. There's no fool like an old fool, the saying goes. And maybe that's what I was. But as I danced with Daisy Hatfield, I forgot about the difference in our ages. She was a woman, and I was a man. And I was mighty glad of it. I hope those musicians wouldn't waste any time before launching into another tune. But before they did, a man I didn't know stepped up to Daisy.
May I have this dance, miss?
I'm sorry, I've already promised it to Mr. Strickland here.
Oh, well, maybe the next one.
I'm afraid not. You see, all my dances tonight are promised to Mr. Strickland.
Sorry, son. You'll have to excuse us now. We got some dancing to do.
I'm sorry if I spoke out of turn, Mr. Strickland. I certainly understand if you don't want to dance every dance with me tonight. I wouldn't dream of monopolizing your time.
Don't you worry about that.
I just... Well, it sounds bad. Especially since Father's going to build a church here. And I'll be seeing these people all the time. But I just don't feel any real connection with most of them. You know what I mean? They live their lives and there's no color, no adventure. But I look at you and I see something totally different. I see a man who's been places and done things.
I wouldn't dream of arguing with you, Miss Hatfield, but you got me wrong. I'm just a rancher, plain and simple.
No, I don't think there's anything plain and simple about you, Mr. Strickland.
You know, if we're going to be dancing together all evening, maybe you better call me Jim.
I'd like that, but only if you call me Daisy.
Then I reckon we got a deal, Daisy. The musicians played 4 or 5 more songs before calling a halt.
We'll be back in a spell, folks. Why don't y'all get some punch and take a gander at those pies and cakes the ladies will be raffling off in a little while. Remember, all the proceeds will go to building a church here in Largo.
Wait, this dance is to fund the church?
That's right.
But your pa's not here.
No. He'll take the money, but that doesn't mean he cares to associate himself with the way it's being raised.
While I was dancing with Daisy, I hadn't really paid any attention to the fellas who'd come to town with me, except for catching a glimpse now and then of Randy or Vince twirling around with one of the local gals. I looked around and saw the two of them now eyeing the baked goods along with Enoch and Gabe. I didn't see Bert anywhere, though, but I didn't worry about him. He was around somewhere. Can I fetch you some punch, Daisy?
That would be very nice, thank you.
I went over to the table and waited for my turn. I was just reaching for a cup when a young fella behind me started talking to a friend.
You better forget about the punch and come with me. There's gonna be trouble outside. Jed Flannery's got a guy cornered and is threatening to hand him a beating. But if you ask me, Flannery's trying to goad him into a real fight. A gunfight.
Who's Flannery after now?
One of those guys who used to work at the train station down on the county seat. I think his name is Chadwick or something like that. You know, a chubby kid. If he draws against Flannery, we can find out for sure when we read his name in the obituaries.
He had to be talking about Bert. Now, I didn't know who Jed Flannery was, but Bert didn't need to be getting in a gunfight with anybody. I didn't think Bert even owned a gun. He sure hadn't brought one with him to the dance. But that wouldn't stop this fella Flannery, who probably had friends with him. One of them would be glad to loan Bert a gun. I'd seen that little trick pulled many times in the past, and it always put a burr under my saddle. Men who had no business matching their draw against someone else's were practically forced into it, and they nearly always wound up dead. The man I'd overheard had said the trouble was outside. I wheeled from the table and headed for the door as fast as my legs would carry me without running. I wasn't the only one headed for the door. Quite a few young men were going in that direction as well. Word of the impending fight must have spread through the schoolhouse. Light spilled through the schoolhouse's open door and spread over the ground in front of the building. A couple of cottonwoods stood off to one side, giving shade to the area where the kids played when they had recess. Now, a couple dozen men crowded under those trees, forming a rough half circle. Bert was in that circle, with his back pressed up against one of the trees as if he'd retreated that far and couldn't go any further. I guessed that the man who stood in front of him was Jed Flannery. Three other men were with him, standing back a little to let Flannery run the show. I recognized a couple of the other men with Flannery. One of them had his right arm in a sling. He was the drunken loudmouth from the saloon who Enoch had shot when he tried to plug me in the back. One of his buddies from that fight was with him. I didn't know the third man, but I figured he had to be part of Flannery's bunch too. I'd never seen Jed Flannery before, but I knew the type. He was handsome enough that the gals would like him, and he knew it well enough that the knowledge put an arrogant smirk on his face. He wore a holstered gun, which set him apart from the other men at the dance. Most of them weren't armed. I wasn't, although my Winchester was in the saddle boot of my horse. It was easy enough to figure out what had happened. The man Enoch had wounded knew there was a good chance the Fishhook crew would be here at the dance tonight. So he had shown up looking for revenge, bringing with him a friend of his who fancied himself a gunman. This fella Flannery had jumped on the first one of us to cross their path, who happened to be Bert.
You yellow-bellied, cowardly, fat tub of shit. You gonna fight me or not?
No, I won't. Leave me alone. I ain't done nothing to you.
Leave me alone. Why, you sorry excuse for a man. You big, lily-livered son of a bitch. Come on. Put him up.
You ain't in this alone, boss.
I looked over and saw that Enoch had followed me out of the schoolhouse. He wasn't by himself, either. Gabe was with him. And right behind the two of them were Vince and Randy.
I'm the one who plugged that varmint. His fight's with me, not the rest of y'all.
I don't imagine he sees it that way. I think they got it in for all of us. So we'll just meet them all at once.
I like the sound of that. Come on!
Gabe moved into the crowd surrounding Bert and his tormentors. Enoch was on one side of him. I was on the other, and Vince and Randy were right behind us. People got out of our way as we strode forward. I emerged from the crowd in time to see Flannery land a blow to Bert's jaw. The two able-bodied men with him had hold of Bert, each of them holding an arm. The wounded hombre stood to the side, watching with an eager expression on his cruel features.
If I can't make you fight like a man, I'll whip you like a dog.
I'd say that you remind me of a dog, all right. But I like dogs, and that'd be insulting them. I reckon I'd rather compare you to a skunk. Slowly, Flannery turned to look at me. He was older than I thought at first, probably close to 40.
Did you say something to me, mister?
I did. I said that you're not good enough to be called a dog. You're a low-down skunk, and you're stinking up the place. Now let go of that boy and take your stench on out of here so decent folks can go back to having a good time.
You talk mighty big. You figure on backing up what your big mouth says, mister?
He'll back it up. And he won't have to do it alone, neither.
That's right. That one. The tall, skinny bastard. That's the one who shot me when I wasn't looking, Jed. Watch out for him.
Nobody's shooting tonight. I ain't packing an iron. Came to town to dance, not shoot.
That was your mistake, old man.
I knew Flannery was about to make his move as soon as he did, so I made mine first. I reached out with my left hand, caught hold of his shirt, and jerked him toward me. My right fist came up, cracked against his jaw, slewing his head around, and I got hold of his shirt with both hands. As his head came back around toward me, I lowered my head and butted him in the face. A hard shove sent him staggering into one of the men who'd been holding Bert. Their feet got tangled up and both of them went down. I bent over and plucked Flannery's gun from its holster. The crowd started to back off hurriedly. The man with the wounded arm was still on his feet, as was the other fellow who'd been holding Bert while Flannery punched him. Neither of them looked like they wanted any part of this anymore. But I grabbed the one in the sling before he could crawfish out of there and rammed the gun muzzle under his chin. You started all this, just like you started that trouble in the saloon. You brought your gunslinging friend here hoping somebody would die tonight, didn't you? Well, somebody might. All I'd have to do is pull this trigger. And I'm thinking mighty serious-like about it, too. If I let you go tonight, you'll just slink off and sell up somewhere like a possum until you built up enough courage to come after me and my friends again. Seems to me the simplest thing to do would be to just go ahead and kill you right here and now, put an end to it. I know I'm sick of seeing your ugly face. He looked like he wanted to talk, so I pulled the gun away a little. You got something to say?
I'm sorry. I won't ever bother you again, Mr. Strickland. I swear it.
Oh, so you know my name, do you? You've been asking around about me?
No, sir. I swear
I don't want to listen to your damn promises. So I'll make you one. Here's what I'm going to do. If I ever see you again, I'll kill you. No talking. I'll just kill you. If I see Flannery or any of your other friends, I'll kill them. And then I'll come find you. You know what I'll do then?
Kill me?
That's right. I gave him a push and kept the gun pointed at him as he stumbled back a step.
Now get out of here! All of you!
I won't forget.
You better. You better forget everything that happened here tonight, mister. Otherwise, you won't live much longer.
Flannery didn't say anything else, but he glared at me with snake-eyed hate as he climbed to his feet. The crowd had backed off so far now that the four men had plenty of room to walk away. I didn't lower the gun until they had swung up into their saddles and galloped off into the night.
Mr. Strickland, you saved my life.
No, they just wanted to push you around a little. I reckon the only ones they really wanted to kill were me and Enoch.
They'd had trouble doing that.
I noticed for the first time that Enoch had a 2-shot derringer in his hand.
I thought you said you weren't armed.
I stretched the truth a mite.
He tucked the derringer away at the small of his back where his shirt covered it. Vince took out his bandana and handed it to Bert.
Your mouth's bleeding, Park.
Bert dabbed at the blood.
Are you all right?
Yeah, I'm fine. Let's just go on back inside.
How'd they come to corner you out here?
I just stepped out for some fresh air. It's a little warm in there.
Bert, Randy, and Vince started toward the schoolhouse. Enoch, Gabe, and I fell in behind the three of them. I still had the gun I'd taken from Flannery in my hand. I tucked it behind my belt for the time being. How'd the two of you know there was trouble out here?
Saw you moving fast toward the door. Figured there had to be a good reason for it. Came along to see what it was.
Well, I'm glad you did.
I don't know why. Looked to me like you didn't need any help.
But if I had needed it, you were there.
We ride for the brand. When a fishhook man needs help, we'll be there.
It was good to see that some things about the West hadn't changed, even in a new century. As we came up to the door, though, Enoch and Gabe suddenly shied away from me.
Where are you fellas going?
Somebody's waiting for you.
Enoch was right. Daisy Hatfield stood there just outside the door.
I thought you boys claimed to ride for the brand and stand by a part in times of trouble.
Well, yeah, but not where angry females are involved.
The crowd outside the schoolhouse had mostly been men, but some women had come out to watch the trouble too, and it appeared that Daisy was one of them. I walked up to her. I'm sorry you had to see that, Miss Hatfield.
I'm not, and I thought you were going to call me Daisy.
Yeah, reckon I forgot. But about that little ruckus.
I think it was thrilling the way you stood up for your friend. More people in this world need to stand up for what's right. That's the only way to keep the bad men from taking over.
I can't argue with that.
I should say not. Do you think those men are really gone, Jim?
I sure hope so. I'd hate for anything else to interfere with our dancing.
Me too. Come on. I think they're going to start playing again soon.
I never got that punch for you.
It can wait until next time.
So it did. Daisy danced a little closer to me this time, although there was still nothing improper about it. We danced until the next break. Daisy had to fend off several men who tried to cut in. She did it politely but firmly. And eventually, they all gave up. I really think you should be enjoying the company of fellas who ain't old enough to be your daddy.
You're not that old.
You're wrong about that. I was born in 1867.
You're not even 50 years old yet. My father is 55, and he looks and acts older than that. You look and act like a man 15 years younger than you really are, Jim.
Even if I was 15 years younger, I'd still be too old for you.
You don't know much about women, do you?
I know plenty.
Women mature much faster than men. I feel like I've been grown up for decades now. That's why women prefer older men. Intelligent women do, anyway.
I didn't know what to say to that, so I didn't say anything. I just kept dancing with her. I'd made my feelings clear to her. I'd warned her, if you will, so whatever happened from here on out, my conscience would be clear. Well, that's what I told myself, anyway. I wasn't sure if I believed it or not. During one of the breaks during the evening, when I finally got around to fetching those cups of punch for Daisy and me, Randy, Vince, and Bert came over to the table where the punch bowl sat. Randy and Vince slapped Bert on the back.
You need to tell Bert how proud you are of him, Mr. Strickland. He's been dancing with some of the prettiest girls here.
Well, is that right? See how easy it is once you get over being scared, Bert.
I never actually got over being scared, Mr. Strickland, but girls keep coming up to me wanting to dance. I don't understand it.
He's too much of a gentleman to let him down, though. So he goes ahead and dances with him.
Those gals heard that he was in a fight with Jed Flannery outside. That's all it took.
Ah, girls love a bad boy, Bert. You'll do well to remember that.
I suppose so, sir. Nobody ever thought of me as a bad boy before.
I took the punch back to Daisy.
Thanks, Jim. Why don't we go outside to drink it?
I don't know if you'd want to do that. There are fellas out there passing around flasks and chewing tobacco. It's not really any place for a lady.
I've seen plenty of unladylike behavior in my time. You forget, Jim, that a minister is sort of like a doctor. People usually don't show up on his doorstep unless they're in some sort of trouble and need help. Before my mother passed away, she always tried to shield me from that part of my father's calling. And so does he, to a certain extent. But I've still witnessed plenty of human misery.
I'm not sure sipping whiskey and chewing Red Man qualifies as human misery, but it is a mite warm in here. Some fresh air would be nice. We carried our cups out of the schoolhouse and ambled over to the trees where the confrontation with Jed Flannery had happened earlier. Daisy sort of eased into the shadows, and I followed her. We stood there sipping punch while a night breeze stirred the branches over our heads. After a while, it seemed like I ought to say something. Other than that little scrape, it's been a fine evening.
Jim, shut up.
She was in my arms before I could stop her. Not that I would have tried very hard if I'd had advance warning. I was glad my cup was almost empty, because it slipped out of my fingers and fell to the ground. I put my arms around her waist and held her against me. She slid her arms around my neck and held on to me like she planned on never letting me go. Finally, her lips moved away from mine. Daisy, this just isn't right.
Oh, hush up. I may be a preacher's daughter, but when it comes to things like this, women know a lot more about what's right and wrong than men do.
It wasn't like we were doing anything that improper. Just a little sparking under a tree. So I kissed her again. And what with one thing and another, we didn't go back inside the schoolhouse until we heard the fiddle player scraping his bow against the strings as another number started up. The dance lasted pretty late, especially in a place where folks generally went to bed with the chickens. When it finally broke up, there were a lot of farewells shouted between the departing families.
Boys and girls who had fallen in love that night held hands until the last possible second. Men who'd passed around the flask a little too much stumbled on their way. Automobiles started up as men worked the hand cranks on the front of them. I walked out of the building with Daisy, and we stepped out under the stars.
I hope to see you again next time I come to town, Miss Hatfield.
I hope so as well, Mr. Strickland. Do you know when that will be?
No, I don't. I've got a ranch to run, and I expect it'll take up most of my time. But my cook has to come to town for supplies now and then, and I might just come with him when he does.
That would be nice. My father and I are staying at the boarding house, if you'd care to call on us.
Yeah, we'll see. Your father's liable to need help getting that church built. I might make a donation.
We all do the Lord's work in our own way, Mr. Strickland.
Later, as we were on our way to the ranch, Enoch eased his horse up alongside mine. Behind us, Gabe dozed in the saddle, clearly having mastered the old cowhand's art of sleeping and riding at the same time. Straggling behind him came the three youngsters. They'd snuck outside too many times for a nip, and they would pay for that in the morning. A man can never welch on the debt he owes to a belly full of hooch.
You spent a lot of time tonight with that preacher's gal, Jim.
I did.
You sure it's a good idea getting mixed up with a girl as young as that one?
I'm not mixed up with her. I just danced with her.
And went outside with her. I ain't asking what you did out there.
And I ain't telling. Don't you worry about it, Enoch. I didn't sully the young lady's honor, and I don't intend to.
Good. I'd have a hard time riding for a man who'd take advantage of a girl.
I won't let things get out of hand, Enoch.
Hell, I didn't think it was a good idea for me to get mixed up with Daisy any more than he did. I'd figure out a way to divert her onto some other, more suitable path, I told myself. But as things turned out, I didn't have much time to worry about that, because a few days later, Sheriff Emil Lester came back to the fishhook, and nothing was the same after that. The first time Sheriff Lester visited the ranch after I took it over, he drove up in a buggy. This time, he came in an automobile, and we heard it coming before he even drove into sight. The car finally got close enough for me to recognize the man I saw through the glass window that stuck up in the front of it. The sheriff sat there sawing wildly back and forth with the wheel, making the automobile jerk from side to side. I had a hunch he hadn't driven much. Gabe and I were the only ones at the house just then. Enoch and the boys were out helping the cattle drift back to the high pastures where they would graze for the summer. Randy, Vince, and Bert had been hungover and miserable the day after the dance, just as I expected them to be. But a day's hard work had driven most of the miseries out of them. They were almost back to normal now. I waited patiently in the front yard where I'd been working on my saddle. Gabe came around the corner of the house from the cook shack.
What is that god-awful racket? Sounds like a dragon from a storybook, a snorting and a bellerin'.
It's an automobile. Wait. You read storybooks, Gabe?
No.
I think I'd rather it was a dragon. I don't cotton to those contraptions. There's such a thing as too much progress, if you ask me. But I remember hearing about how they drove that golden spike and finished up the Transcontinental Railroad. I said it right then. I said to myself, this here is the beginning of the end of the frontier the way God intended it to be. As the automobile carrying Sheriff Lester approached, I stood up, walked out, and waited for him with my hands tucked in my hip pockets and my hat resting on the back of my head. The car shook and rumbled to a stop. Despite the dust that coated it, the black paint still had a new-looking sheen. Sheriff Lester climbed out, took his hat off, and used it to swat at his clothes.
By God, that thing kicks up more dust than a whole herd of horses.
Well, why'd you buy it then?
I didn't. The county bought it for me. The commissioner said it was time to bring law enforcement in the county up to date. If you ask me, they just wanted to be able to brag that the sheriff's department has an automobile.
The sheriff brushed off his hat, too, and clapped it back on his head.
I've got business with one of your riders, Strickland.
They're all out on the range. Who is it you want to see?
Vince Porter. He does ride for you, doesn't he?
Yeah. What do you want with Vince?
That's between him and me. Where can I find him?
Well, I don't know exactly. I reckon we can locate them, though. And the boys are out moving some stock to their summer graze.
Point me in the right direction.
Now, hold on. You're not thinking about driving out there in that thing, are you?
Why not?
Well, for one thing, the range may be too rugged for it. And for another, even if you can get there in it, the blame noisy thing is liable to scare some beef right off my cows. How about I saddle up a couple horses for us? We both ride out to find Vince.
Oh, thank God. I was hoping you'd offer something like that, Strickland. I've got to drive that car all the way back to the county seat, and I'm not sure my butt can stand up to any extra miles in it.
It didn't take long to slap saddles on a couple of horses. We rode along the creek and then turned south toward the hills. The thin haze of dust I saw rising between us and the hills gave me something to aim for. Within half an hour, we came in sight of a good-sized bunch of cows drifting along with Enoch and the three young punchers behind them.
Which one is Porter?
Well, that one there with the red hair. You come out here to arrest him, Sheriff.
Arrest him? Why would I do that?
You tell me. As far as I know, the young fella hasn't done anything wrong.
Well, as far as I know, he hasn't either. If you must know, I came out here to deliver some news to him. Bad news. I could have sent a deputy, you know, but I thought it was important enough to take care of it myself.
I sure don't like the sound of that.
You're about to like it even less. But you're not the one it's meant for, so just back off and let me do my job, Strickland.
Lester heeled his horse into a faster gait, and I pulled my horse alongside his. I didn't back off. I stayed right beside him as we rode up to the crew. But I didn't say anything else either. Not surprisingly, Enoch was the first one to know we were coming. It was hard to put anything past that old gun wolf. He'd wheeled his horse around to face us, and his right hand moved closer to the butt of his holstered revolver. I held up my hand, hoping Enoch would understand I was telling him this was a peaceful visit. If the sheriff noticed Enoch's reaction, he didn't give any sign of it. He kept riding as the three young punchers reined in and turned their mounts as well. Lester and I came to a stop about 10 feet from the little group of riders.
Howdy, boss. Looks like you brought us some company.
The sheriff's got something to say, Vince.
To me? I haven't done anything wrong, Sheriff, I swear. At least not that I know of.
I know that, son. You better brace yourself. There was an accident in the rail yard this morning. Your father was killed.
No. No, it ain't possible. My dad's fine.
I'm sorry. He isn't.
What happened?
Well, you can get all the details later in town.
No! No, I want to know now! Tell me, Sheriff. I won't believe it unless I hear it from you.
All right. I reckon you got a right to know. They were moving some freight cars around in the yard this morning when your father got pinned between a couple of them. He never had a chance. It was quick, though. That's what they told me, and I believe it.
He worked for the railroad for years. He wouldn't have been careless enough to get caught between two moving cars like that. He knew his way around the yard too well for that to happen.
Like I told you, it was an accident. The cars weren't supposed to be moving. An engine bumped one of them and knocked it into the other one.
Then it was the engineer's fault.
No, he tried to stop short of the freight car. The brakes went out and he couldn't. Nobody's to blame for it. It was just a tragic accident. And I'm awful sorry for your loss, Vince.
My mom?
She's all right. The railroad sent word to her right away. Some of her friends are with her. Wise are the other railroad men. I'll take you back to town with me. You'll want to go to your mother.
I've got work to do.
No, son. You go on with Sheriff Lester. We'll finish up here and then head for town later ourselves.
You can't...
This crew sticks together, through good and bad alike. We'll see you later. You go on now. Looking pale and shaken, Vince rode off with Sheriff Lester. Once they were gone, Enoch shook his head sorrowfully.
That's a damn shame. Vince is a good kid. He shouldn't have to lose his pa like that.
I don't know what he's gonna do. He'll have to support his ma now.
We pushed the cattle on into the hills, then headed back to the ranch headquarters to clean up. There was no air of impending celebration this time, like there had been before the dance. We were all quiet and solemn. When we got there, we found that Gabe already knew what had happened. Lester had told him when the sheriff returned there with Vince. The two of them had started off toward the county seat in Lester's automobile. It was evening by the time we reached town,
the sun having set while we were riding in. We didn't know where Vince's parents lived, but I figured they could tell us at the train station. So that's where we headed first. The ticket agent gave us directions to the house.